Okay. I'm going to give the guys on the recording a shout out because this is the first time that I think I'm intentionally recording myself speak for people that are not present in the room. But Yonatan is here with us, so you know, we have people on both ends of the multiverse. Last time we basically just ended off by discussing the fact that kinyanim are usually often a combination of actions and of intentions. I'm not going to go through that exactly again, but we did discuss that one can kind of look at the Maisa as typically being the default goyim of the kinyan, and one can also see that das is really the essence of the kinyan. And then the third way to think about kinyanim would be basically that each kinyan expresses or manifests both Maisa and das in different ways. But the key point why I'm bringing this up now is because in kinyanim, the idea is that there's always some concrete, at least symbolic act, connected to change of the very thing that you attempt basically to transact or to change the status of. That's just a name. You know, you have Hagbah and Meshicha. Those are very physically focused. But at the very least, the point is that they do have concrete actions. Kesef as a kinyan is already a bit different, and Shtar too. Kesef is different because you're using money to cause the transaction, but money, again, is not the thing that you're trying to change the hands of. You're trying to give the money over to the mocher, but the mocher is not necessarily giving the konet possession physically of the davar hanikne. And shtar, obviously, is that way as well. It's not about being kone the shtar, of course, but it's about being the object represented by the shtar. Sudar, this is sort of the question as well, where there is some level of absence of a concrete act of kinyan. There's no question, basically, that we paskin kelev shel kone, which means that the kone is giving something physical to the makne, despite the fact, which is significant, that there is a machlokes, maybe kelev shel makne, which would make it even stranger, that the makne would be giving something to the kone, ignoring any real handing over of any object to any of the parties. But is it, this is the question, when we say kelev shel kone, is it even like kesef? A maisa kinyan bekuf hadavar. When the kone gives over something to the makne, is it seen as being some kind of exchange? I give you kesef, I give you the sudar, and you give me something in return. And so even it's possible, on the one hand, basically, the kone is, after all, giving the makne hana'ah. Hana'ah might be kekesef, in which case it resembles at least the a little bit more different kinyan of kesef. On the other, there are so many reasons to think that kinyan sudar is not working that way at all. That it's not about the kone using the sudar to be mahane, the makne, like he would if he was giving him kesef. Indeed, on the one hand, you say pachos mishava pruta, the sudar doesn't need to be a pruta. It doesn't work, that is, kinyan sudar, in kiddushin lamaskana. There's a possibility that we say kelev makne, maybe dafka. We'll see that maybe kinyan sudar is called kini almanas lahaknas, which implies that we're de-emphasizing the cheftza that you're giving to the makne in a big way. Maybe we even say that if the makne is tafas, the cheftza, the tzudar, that we take it away from him. And there may be even a view that there's no kolsa kinyano by sudar, that even way after the thing, the sudar has been transferred, even way after that, the makne can still transfer the sadeh, or whatever it is that he's trying to give the kone, even when the situation of sudar like has long been kolsa. That's what we mean when we say kolsa kinyano, which implies very much all these features of sudar, some which we've already discussed last time, and some that we put on the docket to now discuss this time. So there's a very different mechanism of kinyan. Yet, you could explain away each one of these anomalies. Like the subjective ones for sure, but even the objective facts. You can explain away pachos mishava pruta. You could explain away Kalev Shel Kona. You can make them basically just seem like Kinyan Kesef, where the Davar HaNikna isn't being used in the Maisa Kinyan, but at the very least Kesef is. And at that, from that perspective, it still is some kind of physical, concrete Maisa Kinyan. But if we assume for the moment, based on all of the features and characteristics I pointed out, that it doesn't work like Kesef, that when the Kona is giving the Sudr to the Makna, it's not supposed to be because the Sudr is functioning as Kesef to the Makna in exchange of, you know, the Davar HaNikna to the Kona, that it's not about what you give in order to get, not a barter of the objects either, and therefore our general model of Kinyan utilizing concrete physical acts to generate the change in legal status, so what have we? What do we have? We are now at a point, basically, where we've identified that it's possible that Sudr completely de-emphasizes any physical or concrete act in order to affect the Maisa Kinyan. If that's the case, and we have a totally different model, so then what is the Svara, basically, for the Kinyan of Kinyan Sudr? That is the point you need to get to in order to then appreciate what we're about to say next. What is the nature of Kinyan Sudr? And so the answer might be, if it's not about the physical Maisa Kinyan, then we then turn to our other comrade, the other component of Kinyan, that maybe that component actually does everything, given the absence of the concrete Maisa part that is usually characteristic of Kinyanim. And what is that? So maybe it's the resolve and determination that usually just backs up or serves side by side the act. Here is the primary instrument to generate the new legal status that makes what was the Maknez in the past now, through this Gemira's Das, the Konez. Believe it or not, in a word, Kinyan Sudr might be a Kinyan al Yedei Gemira's Das. Through this determination, through this concrete resolve, since it's not about a Maisa Kinyan, but it's just about the Gemira's Das, that's how you'd have to explain a Sudr which on the surface presents as being a major chisaron in the Maisa Kinyan that we always find, a physical act that we always find in Kinyanim at large. So if that's the case, then it explains anomalies because Kinyan Sudr is not Kesef. And then a de-emphasis of the item being used for the Kinyan, that it's Pachos, that maybe it doesn't work in Kiddushin, that maybe you would have thought Das, the Kelev Shel Makne, the fact that maybe if Tafas, even if the Makne decides to hold on to it, we might take it away, the fact that we call it Kini Almanas Lahaknos, as if to say that the Makne is not receiving anything, the idea that there'd be a Shita, that even long after this action has been done, the Sudr's been given, months later, the Makne can still do the transaction, Kulsa Kinyano, that clearly reflects a Kinyan, which is very much not about the present physical exchange of the Sudr, but it's about something else, and that something else we're trying to explain is the Da'as, is the resolve, the determination, which in most Kinyanim is just a component, is just a supplemental thing. Here is the entire, creates the entire change of the identity of the object through the Da'as Makna. And the emphasis Dafka on Gemir's Da'as as affecting the Kinyan explains yet other anomalies in the world of Sudr. Some we've already explained, like I said, I'm not going to go through all them again, but the Havamina that maybe there was a need for Eidei Kiyum, which was actually the Shitas Hagaon, that you need Eidim to preside over and provide this Das. Eidei Kiyum, as Rav Chaim explained in Hilchos Yibam V'Chalitza, corresponds to institutions that require Das as opposed to something like Kavana or Ratzon. So they'd be there, the Eidim, they'd be necessary for that given the qualitative threshold, like we find, let's say, in Kiddushin and Gerushin. So apparently, because Sudr would be focused exclusively on Das, you might have thought that you need them as well. So that actually is one of the Shitos. And then I think last time we emphasized that even though the Rambam Tosfos reject it, they're struggling with it, Dafka, when it comes to Kinyan Sudr, even though they never really thought or to take it so seriously by other Kinyanim. So even the Shitos that reject it seem to reinforce the fact that Sudr is nevertheless this very Da'as, Gemira's Da'as, exclusive, focused type of Kinyan. We also argued it'd be why Katan can be Makne with Chalipin, Ein Kinyan Miyad HaKatan Klum, because Kitanim can agree, they can state their intent. We all know kids, you know, right? We know kids. We learn with kids sometimes. They can have ratzon or kavana, but they aren't b'nei das. So they don't have it in them categorically what we mean and need. In chalipin, we don't. They can't have gemiras das. Moreover, it's why we say kinyan b'fnei shnayim ein tzarich lomar k'suvo, because stam kinyan l'ksiva ome. Being based on das ha-mischayev as well as shtar, that is, cultivating and committing via his das ha-mischayev to the shtar, so kinyan relies and works that way as well. Because you're basically just transcribing that da'as you mustered in Kenyan into the shtar. And maybe adeya is that it's automatic with no chazara. I'm saying these things quickly because we basically said them last time. We then took it so far to point out that that underlying characteristic of being about da'as driven is why the Rambam bases Katan's inability in one on the other. In Mechira Chav Tes, he says that the Kenyan of a Katan is ineffective, Kenyan Sudar, based on the fact that he can't produce a shtar. And in Malve Velove, Chavav Yud, we said the reason a Katan can't make a shtar is because the Katan, the Kinyan of a Katan, the Kinyan Sudar of a Kinyan, is no good. A Kinyan, basically, of Gemiras Das. So now that we said all of that, just to bring us back where we were, let's finish with a few more examples and then move to Dvarim. There's a Shita in Tosos, Kedushin Chavav and Bebez, quoting Rabbeinu Shemaya, that a Kinyan Sudar cannot be done Shalo b'fnei Hakone. If you have a Machne who's ready and willing, determined to give a field to a Kone, the Kone does not need to be present at the time of the Kinyan, according to most Rishonim. In other words, you could have Edim, or any individual for that matter, who acquires this wonderful field on behalf of, you know, the Kone Shimon. Why would that be the case? Because we would say, Zachin la'adam shalo b'fanav. You can make any kinyan not in front of him, as long as it's Zachin la'adam shalo b'fanav. You could be Moshech something on behalf of a Kone, all of those things. But yet, we find the Shita of Rabbeinu Shmaya, who says that if the Kone is not present, the kinyan will not work, even though Zachin la'adam shalo b'fanav. Why would that be? It's hard to understand why that would be. But if we are to suggest some kind of svara, it might be that if the machne doesn't have the presence of the kone to whom he is kind of stating and developing this resolve to hand over the object to, and that is an essential part of this kinyan, of the transfer, then it's possible if the kone is not there, there's a chisaron in the gemiras das of the machne. That might be an explanation, but you have to assume then that kinyan sudar works in that kind of way. That what happens in the present isn't enough from a physical standpoint, but it's about a certain miras das that's undercut, apparently, this is the chiddush, by the lack of the presence of the kone. Next, the Gemara on Baba Basra Kuf Yadalat Aman Aleph discusses the idea of being chozer after having made a kinyan. Can you be chozer on the kinyan you said you would make? So the Gemara says, basically quotes a machlokas between Rabbah and Rav Yosef, whether or not the chazara needs to happen while they're asukin ba'osu inyan, or the whole time that they're sitting together, they're all sitting in the room until they get up. We paskin like Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef holds that kol zman she'asukin ba'osu inyan, you can be chozer on the kinyan. And the question is, though, in terms of chazara b'kinyan, how does this apply generally in the world of kinyanim? So Rabbeinu Tam in Sefer Yashar Taf Reish Peches thinks that this question of Chazara, Kol Zman She'asukin Vosu Inyan, applies to all Kinyanim equally. It's a general question. You make a Kinyan, there should be some grace period in which you could be Chozer. But all the other Rishonim think that this is limited to Kinyan Sudar. Yet Rabbeinu Yonah points out, not Rabbeinu Yonah, then Muka Yosef points out, that the truth is the question of Chazara B'Kinyan in general is a more complex question. Asukin Va'osu Inyan might be limited to Sudar, but there's a secondary question of the Zman Chazara by other Kinyanim, which is Toch Kedei Dibur Kedivar Dami, a much shorter time period, but do we apply the ability of to be Chozer Toch Kedei Dibur Kedivar Dami by the other Kinyanim equally? And there he has two deos, maybe to be Mechalek between Kesef Ishtar on the one hand, to which we assign Toch Kedei Dibur Kedivar Dami, and then things like Hagba'ah and Meshicha on the other, not even having potentially the capacity of Toch Kedei Dibur Kedivar Dami, and more in the realm parallel, similar to the examples of Avodah Zarah, Kiddushin and Gerushin, which don't have any grace period, even in this tiny, small time frame of Tochadei Dibur or Kediva Dami. There are two deos there, whether or not we should give Tochadei Dibur or Kediva Dami even to Chazaka and Meshicha. What this question surrounds in a bigger way is, how do we understand the nature of the ability to be Chozer in Kinyan? Zeroing in just for the moment, since it's our topic of Kinyan Sudar, the fact that Kinyan Sudar would have this very long period that none of the other Kinyanim have, what could that be based on? Why would it be that even after we've decided to make this Kinyan, there'd be an entire Zman, Kol Zman Shiasukin Bo'osu Inyan, to be able to be Chozer? So one way to explain it, without emphasizing Kinyan Chalipin's unique mode of Kinyan, would be to say something, I think, kind of like the Rush says, that because Sudar in the world is typically done on things that much thought hasn't been put into, whether or not, you know, the Machna is really excited about parting ways with it, there needs to be their Kinyanim that are usually done Pitom, very suddenly and spontaneously. Which might be a reason why Nasnu Chachamim, the Chachamim said, Midir Avanan, because you usually do this in cases very spontaneously, you didn't have time to think about it. So you have all Kozman Shasukin Voso Indian in order to be Chozer. That could be one way, and you could kind of chalk it all up to necessary takanos to protect the Machna. But Rabbeinu the Nemuke Yosef suggests that maybe it has to do with the nature of the Kinyan itself. Not about the nature of the kinyan being done in the cases that it's done, but in the mode. That in kinyan tzedek there's no tefisa of the davar hanikne, kol echad omeid bishalo, each person at the end of the transaction kind of still is in possession of the two things that are theirs. So maybe because of that, Rav Rosenzweig suggested, based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, that Kinyan Sudar includes a reflection period because it is a Kinyan that is about reflection, is about hisponeness, is about determination and resolve, is about the Machne coming to grips with this Kinyan, which might mean that inherently it has more time, it has this Asukin Ba'oso Inyan period. And for that, he kind of suggested why, if you read the Rambam in Perakei carefully, that the Rambam thought to be Mechalek between the Machne and the Kone, that maybe in more light, you, even though the Maskana, both of them could be Chozer, you might think that the Machne is in a particularly stronger place when it comes to being Chozer, because the Chazar is all Talui on him anyway, on the fact that his Das is what ultimately puts what is his into the property of the others, and therefore the Chazara is most possible to be his. Then we discussed different Lashonos of the Shach and the Sma, again, all about de-emphasizing the Maisa Kinyan, which is why, when it comes to other Kinyanim, there's already histalkus. When you give up something which is yours, you're being mistalik from that Chefza. And once you're mistalik, there's no Chazara anymore. But by Kinyan Sudar, you're not giving up the Davar HaNikne, so there's no histalkus of the Kinyan. Or the way the Shach says it, is that when you have a Kinyan Beguf HaDavar, it reflects your resolve, your finality, that you come to terms to give up what you're transacting with. But when it's a Sudar, I'm not giving, there's no one's giving away anything that's theirs. So you have no umdina, you have no simin that the Machne is really finally, you know, ready to give up his object, which could explain, he says, if not for this, says the Shach, I can't explain why Sudar should be different than any other Kinyan. It's an umdina in a Maisa, when I give something in a Maisa Kinyan, which is what legally I'm giving to him, it reflects that I'm ready to part ways with it. Masha'en Kena Sudar, when I'm just giving up the handkerchief and the Machne is not giving him anything physical, there's a time lag because we don't have the umdina yet that he's really determined, he's done, he's ready to part ways with the object. That's Chazara.
So you have more Gemir Stas by something that's been put over?
Ironically, I guess. I mean, that is, we do find that, is kind of like the catch-22 with Chalipin. You have more, I don't know if you have more Gemir Stas, but there's more finality. Because there's also the element of Gemir Stas that's like, you might need more of it quantitatively, whatever that means, or qualitatively, when that's the only thing that's doing the, you know, the doing all the movement. But yes, technically you have more Haskama, I would say, when it comes to Kinyanim, that you're using the thing you're, the Davar HaNikne, in the transaction. Okay, next. This is, let's say, the last example we'll mention on Siddur for now. But I mentioned earlier, I referred to Kni Almanas Lahaknos. In the Gemara in Nedarim basically discusses a case where a certain individual is disinterested or he wants to disinherit one of his children because his children is a renegade child. He steals things, so he doesn't want to, what?
Not learning enough.
Not learning enough, maybe. So he's not willing, he doesn't want to give basically his Yerusha to this son. So he says, I'm not going to give you the Yerusha. The Chachamim went back and said, what happens if your son has another son? No. The Morish's grandson, who's at Tzor B'mir Avanan, says, oh, okay, I hear you. But I still don't want to give it to my son. I only want to give it to my grandson. So this is what I'll do. I'll give my son a Kenyan, Almanas on the Yerusha, Almanas that he's makna it to his son, to my grandson. Meaning I'll allow him to be Morish, Almanas Lahaknas. This is Yerusha, right? He's not giving him anything at present. It's his Yerusha, right? You can make Tanayim in Yerusha. Yeah, Tanayim in Yerusha, all, of course.
I feel like it would be being a Halak
Yerusha,
like
a Tanayim. So the case of the Gemara is you're making a Tanai that my son should only receive my possessions, Almanas, that he's Kone, he's Makne it to his son, that he eventually has, which is not necessarily going to be immediately, you know, when the Yerusha is Chal. So the Gemara says, challenges basically that type of kinyan, and says it's kini almanas lahaknas. It's kini almanas lahaknas, a kinyan, when one person is only kona it to the extent that he could be makna it to somebody else, but for no other reason. The Gemara there invokes chalipin as a paradigm, kinyan sudr. It says, but kinyan sudr works, and kinyan sudr is where the kona is giving a sudr to the makna. Only Amanas Lahaknos, and yet of course we find that that works. So already point number one that we're trying to extract from this sugya is, as Rav Rosenzweig asked, how is Kinyan Sudr really Kini Amanas Lahaknos? It's not really true. Kini Amanas Lahaknos, the way the Gemara conceives of it in the opening, is where I'm giving you a Chefta, only to then transfer that Chefta to kick the can down the road. And then that's an objective question of how much can we see that capacity to be makne as a kinyan in its own right. Can you be kone something to then even have the capacity to be makne it if the only kinyan you have on it is to be makne? Kinyanim in general are a tricky thing. How much do you need of the davar hanikne to really be considered a baal, to be considered a kone? So it's possible this may not be kinyan. That's what the Gemara is discussing, and we have parallel examples. Matana manas lahachzer, is that a matana? You know, we have being marsha someone. You appoint someone to become the Baal Davar just in order to subpoena someone else to court. And you're owed money from somebody else. And you can't go be Tova, and he lives far away. So you appoint someone to become the Baal Davar of the claim to be able to be Tovea someone to Bezdin, to subpoena him to Bezdin. Can I be marsha someone? How does that work? Can I give him basically the status of Baal Davar? The chi of mammon that's owed to him, just in order to be tovea someone to court. All these interesting cases about what it takes basically to become a baal, to then have rights, to have a koach of a baal. So kini almanas lahaknos is exactly the same question. But by sudar is not really like that. I'm not giving him the sudar so he can be makneh the sudar to somebody else. So how can the Gemara call this kini almanas lahaknos? So Rav Rosenzweig suggested that it's kinyan almanas lahaknos to the extent that I'm giving him something to make a kinyan on just to make another kinyan. It still is very different, but if the way you look at sudr is not that I'm giving you something which is real value, but and therefore in exchange of that kesef, so to speak, kik kesef that I'm giving you, you give me something else, but I look at it rather as a kini, take this object just for the sake of being makne to me, das makne, then it does conform a little bit more to kini almanas lahaknos. So then it's fascinating to know that after the Gemara makes that suggestion, kinyan sudr is a case of kini almanas lahaknos, it then responds with two points that challenges whether or not it really is kini almanas lahaknos. And these two points, understood in a certain way, can actually be really good indications that sudr is just like Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, saying it that way, so there is a really very different Kinyan. The first point the Gemara makes is, who says Tafas Mafkina? In other words, Sudr's status as Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, this Kinyan, let's say, where I'm giving you something just to, as a Hechi Timta, to me, Makina something to me, that only works if we say Tafas Mafkina. But if Tafas Lo Mafkina, maybe he is keeping the Davar. Maybe he could hold on to the Kinyan, which would be different than being Kini Amanas Lahaknos. Because if he holds on to the Sudr, he can keep it. Lidori Doros. But we Paskin, according to the Ran, Tafas Mafkina, which rehabilitates saying it is like Kini Amanas. It's just a Hechitimtza for a Kinyan. Because the whole idea that Sudr can be taken away from the Makne, that's the only thing the poor guy's getting. And yet we could take it away from him? What kind of Kinyan is that? That's not even like Kinyan Kesef. The Maisa Kinyan, the Cheftza that's being used in the Maisa Kinyan, is just a Hechitimtza. It's just a Vesad. If we say Tafas Mafkina. Because the Bakhtah can't even keep it if he decides to possess it. Second factor the Gemara points to is that in Kinyan Sudr, there's not Kolsa Kinyano. In Kinyan Sudr, the Maisa Kinyan is being done right now. When I give the Sudr over to the Makne, he's then giving me the Sadeh. But in Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, what we're trying to suggest is you give the son X, and then at some later point, he has to be Makne it to the son. But at that point in time, the original Kinyan is no longer present. It's gone. It's paka. Because again, at time A, Reuven is giving the Kinyan to Shimon, only Almanas Lahaknos at point B to the son. At point B, the original Kinyan, which was just Almanas Lahaknos, is already a point of history. But in Sudr, all of that's happening b'sha achas. I'm giving the Sudr to him, and at that moment of Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, it's going, the field is being sent over to the Kohen. But again, this is a great point, meaning, is that really true in Sudr? Sudr is possible, there's a day in the Meiri, that I can give the Makne the Sudr, and then at some point later on in time, he can decide to be Makne to me. How could that be true? Isn't that a problem? Doesn't that seem to fly in the face, as the Gemara Nedarim is asking its Kasha, doesn't that fly in the case of Kinyanim? How could the Maisa Kinyan be effective way after its effectiveness? Way after it's been transacted, it's been done. Unless you say that, again, we're de-emphasizing the Maisa Kinyan, and it really is anyway about the Makne, Al Yidei Gemiras Das, giving it over to me. So, Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, in its own right, in terms of it being a definition of Sudr, the fact that the Ran, Tosos disagree, but the Ran holds Tafas, Mafkinan, and then last, the fact that maybe there's no problem of Kosla Kinyano, things all reinforcing the parallel to Kinyan Manas Lahaknos, all those three things might be indications that Sudr is working differently, and that differently working, it might be functioning Al Yidei Das. Once that's all true now, getting back, you know, once that's all true, it makes a lot of sense then that Kinyan Sudr might be effective on all Dvarim Haniknim. That it doesn't matter what the Maisa, what the Guf Hadavar trying to be given over is. So it works by Karka, it works by Metaltalin. Because at the end of the day, you might say that certain Kinyanim are circumscribed to particular Cheftzas. You can't do Mashicha on Karka. So Mashicha is not going to work on Karka because Mashicha is attempting to act as a Kinyan beguf hadavar. But if Chalipin is not a Maisa Kinyan beguf hadavar, LMI, we're saying it's about Gemiras Das, it explains its universal effectiveness. Assuming that kind of Kinyan works, it makes sense that it'll work in all types of Cheftzas. Because again, we're de-emphasizing the davar, the Cheftza, for the sake of Das. Which Sefer Yashar?
The one for Avin Tamid.
No, the Sefer Yashar is the opposite.
He says there's no reason to be Mechadish.
In the ability to be Chozer.
Yeah.
I'm saying we Paskin that you can do Kinyan Sudr on all things.
During Kalsa Kinyano. Sefer Yashar.
That there's no Kalsa Kinyano?
No, I mean, Rebbe said that there's no reason to be mechaber between them because they're all considered to be kinyan. So I thought that's talking about the universality of
them. No. I'm saying now a different point. I'm saying that kinyan siddur works for all things. It works for metaltalin. It works for karka. Because you'd only limit certain kinyanim to different kinds of cheftzas if the kinyan works based on its relationship, the way it relates to the cheftza. But since kinyan siddur doesn't attempt to relate to the davar hanikne, to the cheftza, you might say then that it has more global effectiveness. Because it's anyway just about the gemiras das of the makne. That works on karka, metaltalin. And then that is a great transition to our next topic, which is dvarim. Dvarim may pose a massive problem to all kinyanim. Because kinyanim are about doing a maisa kinyan on the cheftza hanikne. But in dvarim, you don't have any of that. So if there is to be a kinyan in dvarim, the kinyan you may say that has the best shot at working is the kinyan sudar, which can work by all like things that are trying to be transacted, by all things. Nitam the kinyan. So there may be the best shot, but even more to the point that the problem in Dvarim is likely to be one which Dafka Kinyan Chalipin supplements. We'll see. In other words, the problem in Dvarim might be that there's no Cheftza, that maybe there's not enough Das, it's more Umdana. In which case, the idea of Sudar, which is all about Gemira's Das, heavily relies and leans on Das and doesn't care about having a cheftza in the Maisa Kinyan, Kinyan Sudar is positioned best to be the Kinyan that can actually be Makne or be Kone Dvarim. Because the limitations that prevent us from saying Dvarim is Nitan the Kinyan might actually be solved Gufa by the mechanism of Kinyan Sudar. So it's not surprising then that wraps up Perek Hay in Hilchos Mechira for the Rambam. Okay, so now let's quickly. But Lamaisa, Kinyan Dvarim is no good. So why not and when not? So let's just try to do this quickly. So what exactly is the issue the Gemara calls Kinyan Dvarim? So stepping back and like thinking about, you know, Kinyanim and the necessary ingredients for Kinyanim. So again, we discussed very much that on the Maisa Kinyan side, so you need a Maisa, typically, and there need to have Das, some kind of Das. But then now we're focusing more on the Cheftza. What are the characteristics of a Cheftza in order for Kinyanim in general to be able to be effective on them? That makes Kinyan Dvarim like a really great parallel to the question of Kinyan Sudar, which tests the requirements in the Kinyan per se. Now we're testing the requirements in the Davar Hanikne, what exactly those is. So it's just interesting to note that like the Rambam has a famous Shita, that even on the Maisa Kinyan side, you don't need a physical act, but you can have just Hischaivus, you can commit yourself to something, Parakid Aleph, Halacha Tesvav, and Tezayin, to something and then be obliged by it. You can be Mischaiv yourself, basically, Mammon or something otherwise to somebody, and that is an effective way of being makne it to him. However, there the Rambam points out that even as that's true, that you can commit to something, and for that to be effective alone, without any maisa, the cheftza itself though needs to be adua, misuyam, there needs to be something real here that you're being mischai of yourself too. But if there isn't, even frankly he says, then if you do a kinyan, if it's something which is not katsav, or is not misuyam, not yadua, so then even the hischaivus, but even with a kinyan, that's not going to be effective. Apparently there are requirements to the davar hanikne. So the question basically is, what then do you need? So there are three problems, basically, three ways of assessing the issue of the kinyan dvarim bi'alma. The gemara of kinyan dvarim bi'alma, of course, is Bava Basra Gimel Amin Aleph, and the Gemara makes it sound like it's clear, Kinyan Dvarim Ba'almahu, that there's no such thing as a Kinyan on Dvarim. So, you know, Mikatzel Katzeh, there are three ways one can assess the problem of Kinyan Dvarim. One is that the problem is that in Kinyanim you need some kind of Cheftza. Kinyanim, like the classical Kinyanim, you really need a real Cheftza in order, or something that you're creating a change on of some sort. and that anything less than that is going to be Dvarim Ba'alma. So when the Gemara says, Kinyan Dvarim Ba'alma, it's because we're missing some kind of Chefza on which Kinyan's whole focus is to create some sort of change in. Dvarim, of course, there's no Ein Bahem Mamish, there's nothing to make a Kinyan on. Then what we're basically saying is the reason Kinyan Dvarim Ba'alma doesn't work is because what we're suggesting is we need something which seems much more like the classical Kinyan. Like Kinyanim, you know, in general that we seem to find. And then any things which seem to defy that model at all are going to be very problematic. We're going to have to try to explain those. How exactly they too also do have some kind of Chefza. The other extreme is basically to say that no, really there's not actually any fundamental problem with Kinyan Dvarim per se, but there's a technical problem of Asmachta. That this particular Kinyan Dvarim that the Gemara is speaking about may just be not concrete enough, it's too futuristic, that you need to overcome problems with the person's seriousness or you know, other technical problems, structural problems, like the thing needs to be mevurar, even if it isn't necessarily a chefza. And from that perspective, it is possible that yes, even though the Gemara says kinyan dvarim ba'alma, that there may be some dvarim, as long as they reach a certain threshold, what that threshold is, we need to figure out, that even, dvarim could be a kinyan. Indeed, that was actually one way we suggested to read the Gemara, that when the Gemara asks, v'chi ratzu mayhave, why should their agreement to break up be significant? They can always be chozer. And then when the Rabbi Yochanan says, b'shakanu miyadan, they made a kinyan dvarim. They made a kinyan suder. At that stage, what was Rabbi Yochanan really suggesting? Let's remember, their kinyan would be at that stage on the agreement to break up. In agreement to break up, it's just dvarim. There's no chefza there. Maybe even in the Havamina, the Gemara was saying, we know that kinyan dvarim is a problem, but maybe this just isn't dvarim. But if this just isn't dvarim, then it must be because there is a type of dvarim. It would depend on how we understood the nature of their agreement to break up. But that would be a nod in the direction that there could be certain kinds of dvarim that are susceptible to kinyan. And then when the Gemara responds, no, kinyan dvarim ba'alma, it would be because it's challenging the assumption that ratzu alone isn't dvarim. But not that there couldn't be, in theory, a kind of dvarim that is subject to kinyan. So on two extremes, we have that you always need a chefza, anything less fall short, or that really, no, it's just that anything on the extreme dvarim is no good, but anything that's a little bit more mevurar or less asmachta oriented is going to be effective. And then there's a, you know, an in-between possibility that maybe intention alone is not enough, but you also don't need a hardcore, you know, classical chefza, but that some legal commitments themselves are formally present in the at the moment, and there are higher statuses of commitment that pushes those things into like a legal chalos territory, which is more of like a middle ground. I don't want to take too much time, so I'm just going to mention certain shitos that line up with it. Like the first approach seems to be something that the Rimigash points out, that you need the tshuva of the Rimigash, that you need you know, like legal essences. Bechol davar sheish bo etzem is his terminology. The second extreme, that like maybe even kinyan dvarim, we said, might be effective, was something we suggested for Rabbeinu Gershom, because the way he seems to formulate the problem in Baba Basra is that there just isn't anything that's been fixed or clarified about your division. The division is so amorphous and doesn't have any specificity that there are just structural problems. You just can't make a kinyan because it lacks the property of Eino Katsuv. But in theory, if you were clear or identified exactly what it is that you're deciding to split up on, even though it would just be a commitment, there could be dvarim, kinyan dvarim on that. That's how we read Rabbeinu Gershom. That really there could be kinyan dvarim, it just needs to be a certain kind of dvarim. That is also how we tried to read the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Shchein and Perek Beis, Halacha Yud, argues that the kinyan dvarim that ultimately works in Shutvus is the one, in breaking up Shutvus, is when you're Ratza Beruchos. Not when you've actually each one has determined which side they're going to take, and then made a kinyan and made a kinyan basically on one was makne the north side to his shudaf, and then on the south side to the other. Instead, the Rambam says they were made a kinyan on being ratza beruach plonis. And that's a big discussion. Just for the sake of time, we won't go through it. But the way the Torah seems to read the Rambam, as opposed to the Rush, the way the Torah understands it, sees that the Rambam's version is really kinyan dvarim ba'alma, because all you were was ratza beruach zeh. That's a commitment. That's an expression of intent, and not of a real ma'aseh kinyan.
The Torah didn't like it because of that?
And the Torah thought it was machlokas Rambam and Rush. The Torah didn't necessarily take a side. Yeah. But the way that the Beis Yosef understands, like the problem here, is that they thought that the Rambam's was just kinyan dvarim. The Prisha weighs in, and they all suggest different ways of understanding what it is that the Rambam and the Rush disagree about. But we suggested that the Rambam might be taking a position that kinyan dvarim works as long as it's mesuyam, it's katsuv, it's clear what it is that you're agreeing on. But it's still never an agreement nonetheless. And then we suggested maybe the riff, and maybe the clearest shita about all of this, because he says that the problem is in asmachta. The problem is asmachta, that you just, when you're just like speaking about things that are in the wind, that there isn't seriousness necessarily. But as long as you say, nosati lo kach v'kach, upasakti al atzmi, kach v'kach, even though you haven't yet given it, then it will be effective. And that is not the problem of kinyan dvar. Good. The Ravan is one of the clearest on the side that you need what is typically a classical kinyan. He defines the problem of dvarim, that the thing which is being given over is not nitan l'meshicha. You can't be mosheich dvarim. There's no kinyan, therefore, on dvarim if there's no meshicha. It's not kinyanable, basically. And the fact that Meshicha would be, what characterizes things that are nitan on the Meshicha is what characterizes the necessary requirements for Kinyan is very noteworthy. It clearly implies, I would say, even about Kinyan Sudar, that having a Maisa Beguf Hadavar is a critical characteristic of Kinyan, even of Kinyan Chalipin, which is interesting in light of the Ravan is really a counterpoint to a lot of the things we've been saying about Kinyan Sudr. For the Ravan, even Kinyan Sudr, the Chefza needs to be Nitan L'Meshicha. It needs to be a physical essence. And that is why Kinyan Dvarim Ba'alma, it's not going to be a Kinyan. Fine. That's in terms of what the problem of Kinyan Dvarim might be. In terms of applications, testing particular scenarios, types of things, and wondering whether they're Dvarim or not, so again, one of the things we mentioned was maybe chalukah. Is chalukah dvarim or not? It's just noteworthy that the Rambam in the end of Parakeh, when he talks about the problem of kinyan dvarim, gives three examples for what is considered to be kinyan dvarim, ba'alma she'ein ba'hamamish. So one of the examples, which is very reasonable, is she'yelech b'schora emploni. I'm committing to do business with somebody. That's just a commitment. It's not even specific. So that's just kinyan dvarim. The third one is she'yishtat v'shnehem b'umanus. That when we agree to become partners in a certain trade, like we'll do weaving together, we'll become shutvim, we'll share the costs, but also the assets and also the gains. And there, it's just interesting that the Rabbi points out, no, that's not kinyan dvarim, because at least in terms of having the shame shutuf could be nikneh b'kinyan. Like, what is a shame shutuf? That's not typically something we see as being nitan lekinyan. It sounds like dvarim, but apparently, for the Ravid at least, that's not dvarim ba'alma. Could it be that the shame shutuf, having like a formal legal relationship to one another, somehow solves the problem and is not considered dvarim? Nevertheless, the Rambam at least says sheyishtat v'shnayim, v'umanos is kinyan dvarim. But it's good to wonder if like this is now like some middle status, that even though it isn't necessarily a classical chefza, even a formal legal commitment to bind ourselves to each other might neutralize the problem of kinyan dvarim. So then, in light of all of that, the fact that the Rambam mentions sheyachleku hachatzer shebeinehem, that the other example of kinyan dvarim is to divide a property between us. It's just curious to think about, like, whether the Rambam chose that example because you'd have the Havamina that it's not Dvarim, or that it's like the most obvious case of Dvarim. That's what I'm trying to bring out by the three examples, the bookends of the Rambam, and then Chatzer between them. That's relevant because I just mentioned our first application to assess whether or not it's Dvarim is Chalukah. When we read the Gemara, one way of reading the Gemara is basically saying Chalukah is always Dvarim, and the Gemara just needed to figure out whether Kinyan Dvarim Ba'alma is a Kinyan or not. But another way of reading it is that the Shakli V'Tarya is Gufa about wondering whether Chalukah's Hashutvin, is really Dvarim. Because you really could make a strong argument that when you have partners that are dividing a property, that commitment to division, especially given their former ties, is not necessarily Dvarim Ba'alma. So that's issue number one. Is Chalukah a Kinyan Dvarim or not? Then Tosvos point out Let me just give this example. Let me just go to the last example. We'll conclude with this, although it'll take us, you know, it is a bigger issue. But let's conclude with this one. Do I not even have the Hebrew yet? Tosfos basically asks a really good question, which is, we seem to have a lot of, it's clear apparently that Chalukah, in the end of the day, is Kinyan Dvarim Ba'alma, unless you're Palag Beruchos. But we seem to find many cases in Shas where there seems to be a problem of Kinyan Dvarim, at least the way we seem to understand the problem of Kinyan Dvarim. And yet, the Gemara seems to be totally fine with those cases. What are some of those? So I'll mention all of them first, the ones that we're going to discuss, and then I'll go through them. The one that Tosas in Bava Basra points out is the Gemara in Bava Metzia Tzadi Dalim and Aleph, Masne Shomer Chinam, or Shomer Sachar, let's say Shomer Chinam, Leos Keshoa, where Shomer Chinam, at some point into his Shmira, says to the Mafkid that I'm going to take on the status of Shoel to you. Tosus is bothered. That sounds like you're basically making a commitment now to be Mechayev yourself in the future in the event that something happens to the object that you'll be Chayev to pay. That seems on the surface to be a problem of Kinyan Dvarim. We'll get back to it. Then you have the Gemara in Ksubis, Nidalim and Aleph, where Tosus bring up the issue of Tosefes Ksuba, where the Chassan commits to give more money to be Tosefes Ksuba beyond what the Halacha requires at minimum. And that seems to be, again, a big problem of Kinyan Dvarim, and because you're committing, basically, to give money to the woman in the event that you die. Not right now, but only, right, Ksuva, the Gemara says famously, Ksuva lo nitnu ligvais mechai. It's all achar misa, the money that you're going to be paying up. And yet there's even a bigger problem, especially if you don't have the money. That seems to be even a bigger issue. But even the fact that you're committing yourself to pay for something later, that would seem to be an issue of Kinyan Dvarim as well. Because you're not giving it to her immediately, right now. And then the third issue is the Gemara, the Sugya in Sanhedrin, Chavdal and Amid Beis, where two litigants accept upon themselves, Neman alai Abba, Neman alai Avicha, Neman alai Shlesha Roy Bakar, people that don't usually qualify as Edim or as Dayanim, they're Pasul, the Edis, or Pasul the Dayanus. And yet the Gemara says that if you make a Kinyan Sudar, to accept these individuals upon yourselves as for testimony, or to litigate, or to judge the case, Ein la'achar Kinyan Klum, the Kinyan works, you're bound by this agreement. And yet, again, it sounds like all the Rishonim are wondering, like, this sounds like a problem of Kinyan Dvarim. You're agreeing to pay a contingent on how the case comes out, but not at present. So the Kinyan you make is on a future Hizchaivas. That would seem, you know, like our case on Bava Basra, to be an issue of Kinyan Dvarim. How exactly do we solve the problem in all of these cases? The way Tosfos, I'm just going to say this really v'kitzer, because I'm sorry, I'm just taking a lot of time out of morning seder. I really didn't realize how long this would take. Tosfos kind of have a very consistent shita in all of these places. They basically think that the problem of Kinyan Dvarim is that you need something for the Kinyan to be Chalon. Like classical Kinyanim, you have a Davar HaNikne, you need some Chavtza for the Maisa Kinyan to be Mechalon, for there to be a Chalos Kinyan. So they invent this idea, which is certainly not obvious, that the chavtza on which the kinyan can be chal on doesn't need to be money or some kind of, you know, classical object, but could even be a shibud nechasim, a shibud on your bank account, on money that you have, that you're not giving right now, but you're creating a zechus gvia by being meshabed your property, or you could even consider a shibud haguf, where I'm committing myself by, again, creating a mechanism to be gove from you. That could also be a chefza on which a kinyan at present can be chal on. Even though those don't seem like things that are typically nitan the kinyan, that are chefzas, that seem more like their dvarim, the idea would be basically that the problem we have in all these cases are really not problems, because there's a more unconventional yet nevertheless qualifying chefza that is a shibud nechasim or shibud haguf. So in the case, for example, of masneh shomer chinam, lios kishoel, the idea would be that even though you're only paying up in the future, what you're committing to now, al yidei kinyan, according to Tosfos, is you're being meshabed atzmo, yourself, even if you don't have the money, let's add. Because you're committing yourself, you're creating a shibud that then allows to the other person, that then allows him, when you have the money, to collect as if you were chayiv him the money at the moment that you were meshabed yourself to him. You're creating a mechanism, basically, to be gove. And that, apparently, even though it seems to be unique, is not going to be a problem of kinyan dvarim, because it is, you know, this chef, so there's a chalos on the shibud haguf. Tosfos say the same thing when it comes to ksuba, and also, same thing, the chassan is committing himself to pay, he's being meshabed atzmo, and that is what he's giving her b'sha'as maisa, which Mamela just kind of like expresses itself at a later point in Maos. But I've really given her this shibud haguf at present. And the kinyan is chal on that. And the same thing really could be true in Ne'eman alai Ava, Ne'eman alai Avicha as well, somehow committing to this future din. Again, I'm being meshabed myself or my nechasim, whatever it is. But Rav Rosenzweig kind of suggested in each one of these cases that it may depend a lot on two things, whether you embrace Tosfos' perspective or you may be able to say something else. One is kind of how you look at the nature of each one of these things, and I'll explain what I mean in a second, but then is also your perspective on kinyan dvarim as well. Tosfos seems to be assuming, in terms of the kinyan dvarim question, that you need something which conforms to classical cheftzas that are nita on the kinyan. Shibud may not be something that you can, you know, make use of in the moment, but it certainly is a zechus that you're being makne immediately. And that may deflect the issues of kinyan dvar. But it also is based on something else. Let me just go through each one of them quickly. Reb Rosenzweig thought, let's say, in Master Shomer Chinam Lios Keshoel, it kind of turns on the following question of how we look at the different shomrim. Do we look at the different shomrim as basically being accepting responsibility for something at present, but only to pay for in the future if something happens? It's a contingency. It's kind of the way like insurance companies work, that you have to pay the insurance company a high premium, you know, a fixed rate at the beginning, you know, of the cycle. And to the degree of the premium, the amount of money that you give them, the more that they'll lay out for you in the event of some future circumstance. But it's only a commitment to pay you back at some later point in the future. So going through all the shomrim, there basically was a correspondence between the advantages, the benefits that the shomer gets, and the responsibility they're willing to take for you at some point later in the future. There's one way of looking at the shomrim from that perspective, which would basically be to say that the shibud only is chal basically when they need to pay you. You give them something, and then in return, they're willing to pay you in the event that something happens at some future point. But then the question becomes, basically, this gets really to the core of the kinyan dvarim question, like when does the shibud, if a shibud, by the way, even solves the problem of kinyan dvarim, when does the shibud kick in? Does it really kick in at the moment of the maisa kinyan, or at some later point? That's a big machlokas rishonim, and affects a lot of questions. Does the shibud kick in when you accept the responsibility, when you take the chefta, when you are nifgad, you know, the object, or does the shiva only kick in the mela when the pshia happens, or the, you know, or the ones happens? When does the chiyuv to pay basically kick in? If it only kicks in later, it's hard to understand how this is not a problem of kinyan dvarim. And you might say, okay, when it comes to stam shomrim in general, you know, so the way you become a shomer is by accepting the object. So that can be there, that can solve the kinyan dvarim problem in regular, in the typical case of shomer. But what if you're already a shomer, you already have the object, and then you say, I'm mishabe myself, I'm accept upon myself to pay you like a shoel. When does that, what?
I didn't get that typical shomer problem.
Meaning, I'm basically trying to prevent, why isn't every case of shmira kinyan dvarim? What are you really doing when you accept shmira? If I'm basically just accepting to pay you later if something happens, so how could you ever be commit yourself to being a shomer? So I'm just saying that there you might just say it's because I'm at that moment I'm getting something from you. I'm getting the object. There's a kinyan on the object. And then the question basically just is like when the corresponding shibud kicks in. And to resolve the problem, I would say, of kinyan dvarim, you know, you could kind of either say, yeah, well, it's because you accepted something, that was the kinyan that you accepted upon yourself for paying later. But you still might wonder, again, when the shibud and shomrim really does kick in. But when you're already a shomer, and you just like, it's just a commitment ba'alma, you go up to the mafkid and say, I'll pay you like a shoel. So how do you do that? Okay, you gave him a sudar. But how, but why should that basically be mechayev him? That seems to be dvar ba'alma. So you have to say a chiddush like Tosos, that at that sha'as, his chayvus, I've been meshabe my guf, if I have money, my nechasim, but if I don't have money, my guf, and that prevents, that derails the issue of kin and dvarim ba'alma. But there is a whole other way of looking at shomer in general, which is that when I accept shmira, we don't look at there as some like future chiyuv to pay, but we look at it as a shame shomer, that there's a significant formal and legal status that you're embracing b'sha'as hashmira. And the more you look at shomer as like a legal status, and like the payment that you pay at the end of the day, just like a chiyuv hashava, there's right now everything happened when you accept the shmira. And there's just a chiyuv hashava later down the road, it's a hashava. It's not a new chiyuv to pay. So the more you see shomer itself already as like a din in the gavra, and as like a formal legal status, b'shaito. And then to the extent that you kind of see all shomrim as being like you can fluidly jump between one and the next. So then now like, let's get back to the case of Master Shomer Chinam, Leos Keshoel. So he's a Shomer Chinam, and then he basically says, we'll make a Kinyan for me to become like a Shoel. If you see him basically as there being a Kinyan to become a Shoel, so it's possible that the problem of Kinyan Dvarim is only when it's just a commitment ba'alma. But maybe a legal commitment, which actually gives me a new shame shomer, a shoel, that's not a problem with kinyan dvarim. Can he now take a shvua? Can the shomer chinam now take a shvua on other things? Or if something really changes in the shomer, it's possible to say that's not a problem of kinyan dvarim. And we're kind of like occupying a space depending on how you look at shomer, but also how you assess the problem of kinyan dvarim, or you could answer the kasha of Master Shomer Chinam Leos Keshoel very differently. The same thing as Shuv Ksuba. How much do you look at Ksuba basically as something which is only a future, a commitment to do something in the future? Again, it's true that Ksuba lo nitnos ligavos mechayim. So are you just going to be paying him in the future, paying her in the future? How exactly do you understand Ksuba? But again, it could be that Ksuba is already, there's already something happening right now. What is a ksuba, in other words? Is it just the financial outlay, the financial payment that she'll get at some later point in time in case of death or divorce, and that's when the mammon, you know, pops up? Or is the whole point the mammon in the future is a way of securing something in the present? The way Rav Chaim formulated that was, it's a chiyuv achshav lehischai. But when you say that it's a chiyuv now, right now, lihischayev in the future, what exactly are you saying? Idea is that if you don't look at just as a way of helping her in case of death or divorce, oh, she'll get the money, but you see that that contingency in the future is something that redefines the nature of the ishus right now, that it's something that is based on me protecting her, the sense that she can rely on me, that I'm committing myself to her in the future, and that even affects the chalos ishus, that maybe even if Suba is a dirabanan institution, that the chachamim imposed a financial imposition, but something that then is the araisa because it's a kiyum in the ishus, because ishus is about creating something which isn't easy to walk away from, that you're committing to her long term, and that enhances the ishus itself, then you can well understand that the chiyuv lehischayev of ksuba is not kinyan dvarim at all. Because it isn't only about the future money. If it was, it would be dvarim. But it's about what the future money redefines in the present and enhances the ishus in a qualitative way. That's why Rav Rosenzweig suggested we may read, you know, the ksuba in between the kiddushin, you know, and the nisuin. Even according to Rashi, that is just to break them up, why would the ksuba of all things be the thing we choose to break up the kiddushin and the nisuin? Unless it is to redefine the ishus. It's not about only the money in the future. It's about what the money in the future affects in the perspective of the parties to each other in their ishus right now. And that would be, again, a different perspective on kinyan dvarim ba'alma, that as long as you push commitment into legal chalos territory, it's not a problem of kinyan dvarim. Only the dvarim that is purely future commitment or futuristic, that has no impact on the present, only that might be the problem of kinyan dvarim. Neman alai ava, neman avicha might also be that. Are you just committing to pay in the future if the verdict comes out a certain way, again, you know, not in your favor? Or are you changing something right now through the kinyan in the present? There are some Rishonim in the Rashba, one of them, that invoke the concept of Neman alai ava being connected to Masnel Mashakasav Shevetorah Bitnai Davar Shevamamon, in which case it's Kaya. That somehow you're being Masnel Mashakasav Shevetorah. You're changing something when it comes to Dine Mamanus. Now, what exactly is that? It could be that the idea is that the halacha, when it came to Dine Mamanos, gave us rules that we typically follow under normal circumstances when it comes to dayanim. You have to use certain dayanim. But I can change the rules of who the dayanim are to be when it comes to Dine Mamanos. It's more flexible, as long as the parties agree that they want to. We could actually change the hagdara of dayanim. It's possible that what you're doing, just to make a much longer story short, in Neman alai ava, Neman alai avicha, is that you're actually being manik, you're being machshir these people as gavra dayanim. And therefore, mamela, when they pass in a case, you're chayav al pidin, masnel mashakasur shebetorah, kayim bitnai davar shevamamon, you're changing the dinim. And then you're machayav yourself, because it's dine mamonus, to pay whatever these now newly appointed dayanim by you have been mechayev you to. If that's the case again, then you're using the kinyan even to affect something right now, not just the future commitment to pay. But all of those are also revolve around certain perspectives in kinyan dvarim be'alma. That we could have some kind of kinyan on something that isn't purely cheftza or mamon oriented, as long as it reaches the stature of a certain kind of commitment, a certain kind of status, or chalos. To end with this, Tosos Ishita is based on something really important, which is just worth closing with. Tosos' idea basically is that a future commitment doesn't need to be seen only as something that happens in the future, but is also based on the creation of a shibud in the present. It's based on committing myself to you in a way that establishes a form of legal chalos. The idea that should be true is based on an important principle. Tosos apply that by Masa Shomachim to Shoel, by Tosefes Ksuba, even to the point that you don't have the money right now, but you can create a shibud haguf in the present that helps you with the problem of kin and dvarim. That's based on the concept of the ethne, that I don't have something right now to give to you, but I can commit myself to give it to you in the future. The halacha of the ethne comes at the end of Abba Basra, and is based on the idea that if I borrow something from you, I'm mishabed my properties that I own right now to you, that they'll back up the loan that I've taken from you. Right? Nichsin de bar inish. So that happens. If I can't pay back a loan, my properties, I'm basically mortgaging or leaning my properties to be able to be collected by you in the event that I can't pay you back the loan that I borrowed. What happens, and I have all those properties now, what happens to, what about a property that I get in the interim period? I borrowed the money, and then in between the borrowing and the gviya, I get new properties. So that's the principle of de'echni. If I say that even the properties I get in the future will be mortgaged to you, you can collect from them in the event that I can't pay back the loan. Do we say de'echni is kana? So we say it's kana, but the question is as follows. What if I'm chozer from that de'echni? I committed to you once I get it, but can I be chozer before I get the property, between when I said I would give it to you and before I get the property, can I be chozer that from the shibud that you have on my properties? It's a machlokas Ramban and Rashba. The shita that holds you cannot be chozer is saying what? It seems to be saying that I can commit myself to you for something I'll get in the future right now. When I say de'ekni, it's possible that it's because of a shibud haguf. That things I can get in the future, I can give myself over to you. I can be mishave my guf to those future things in the present. So the idea of Tosas is basically based on that something you don't have in the moment can still have the status of a kinyan in the present, which would be based on this interesting concept of shibud haguf. All of the Tosas are basically based on that chiddush of treating shibud haguf, of course shibud nechasim, but even shibud haguf as something that seems to conform more to the classical types of kinyan. So that's kind of the problem of kinyan dvarim, and Tosas is mahalchim in the different sugyas. And the way Rav Rosenzweig was trying to help stretch our minds, obviously in those cases, but also in terms of how we appreciate the problem of kinyan dvarim. So what we did in the kinyan dvarim sugya was we first formulated what the problem of kinyan dvarim might be, the three different approaches with the different rishonim, and then we just went through some of the cases which are important to figure out whether they are or are not kinyan dvarim, but also they're very instructive in terms of what the problem of kinyan dvarim really is. Tosos, the way Tosos see the sugya, and try to like reread all those cases in light of that. And the way Rav Rosenzweig is suggesting is like a middle ground where you could have certain types of commitments that are in kinyan dvarim because they're like have kinyan, they're commitments of stature, of formal legal weight, and that's how we would understand the problem of kinyan dvarim more generally. Okay, shkoyach, guys.